You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
I'm Victoria Cash. Thanks for calling the Lucky Land Hotline. If you feel like you do the same thing every day, press 1. If you're ready to have some serious fun for the chance to redeem some serious prizes, press 2. We heard you loud and clear. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com right now and play over 100 social casino-style games for free. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
We all know how important it is to keep your eye on the money, and not just your own. Stay on top of the latest financial and market news with Yahoo Finance, a podcast that releases new episodes almost every day. You'll hear a brief overview of the biggest news in the financial world, all in 3 minutes or less, right after markets close. Check out Yahoo Finance wherever you get your podcasts. That's Yahoo Finance wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Kick-Ass Politics. I'm Ben Mathis. If you're listening for the first time, this is a preview station for Kick-Ass Politics, where I put up a few sample episodes for you to check out. I hope you enjoy this episode, and if you like it, then I encourage you to go to our main program at Kick-Ass Politics and subscribe to the show. There are a lot more episodes there. Just search for Kick-Ass Politics on iTunes, or if you go to the information page for this episode on iTunes, there's a link right there to subscribe to the main show. Also, feel free to check out our webpage at kickasspolitics.com, where you'll find show notes, book recommendations, and all kinds of extras. I'm Ben Mathis, and I hope you enjoy this preview of Kick-Ass Politics. Hey, folks. Welcome to Kick-Ass Politics. I'm your host, Ben Mathis. Over this past holiday weekend, 2,000 conservatives gathered for the Southern Republican Leadership Conference in Oklahoma. And at the end of the weekend, as they often do at these things, they took a presidential straw poll. At the top of the heap, with 25%, was Dr. Ben Carson. Although some Republicans are just now starting to get acquainted with Dr. Carson, his strong showing this weekend should come as no surprise to many in the party. He's been ranking among the top two or three candidates in GOP straw polls ever since he gave the keynote address at the President's National Prayer Breakfast in 2013. On that day 2 years ago, with President Obama right there in the room, Dr. Carson delivered some common sense wisdom on a range of subjects from health care to taxes. And since then, he's skyrocketed from a political unknown to a serious contender for the Republican nomination in 2016. But the thing that makes Ben Carson a compelling candidate and such an inspirational human being is his personal story. Ben Carson was raised by a struggling single mother in the Detroit inner city, but he pulled himself up by his bootstraps, eventually going on to college at Yale, then medical school, followed by a residency at Johns Hopkins. He stayed at Johns Hopkins as a professor teaching surgery and pediatrics, and becoming the youngest major division head in the hospital's history when he was appointed director of pediatric neurosurgery at the age of 33. Since then, he's arguably become the most acclaimed neurosurgeon in America, having performed a number of breakthrough procedures, including the first successful separation of conjoined twins. Dr. Carson's written 6 best-selling books, including his autobiography, Gifted Hands, which was later turned into a TV movie starring Cuba Gooding Jr. In 2014, a Gallup poll named him number 6 on a list of the most admired men in the world, and he's received numerous other honors, including the Presidential Medal of Freedom from George W. Bush. Well, now, if he gets his wish, Ben Carson just might be on the other end of that medal ceremony one day very soon. He officially launched his campaign for president just 3 weeks ago, and today he's coming on the show to talk about his humble beginnings, his surprising political ascent, and some of the life lessons he's picked up along the way. All that and more with Dr. Ben Carson in just a moment.
To Washington, it's time for Kick-Ass Politics. And now here's your host, Ben Mathis.
Just 3 weeks ago, Dr. Ben Carson threw his hat in the ring for president, and he's already making waves in the Republican horse race, And as luck would have it, he's joining me today. Doc, thanks for coming on the show.
Delighted to be here.
You have been well known for years as a surgeon, as an author, a speaker, but you were never really known politically until you gave the keynote address at the National Prayer Breakfast, where you talked about education, taxes, political correctness, and health care, which some people took as a dig at President Obama, who was actually right there in the room, just a few feet away from you. And suddenly, with one speech, overnight, you became almost a conservative folk hero. And you're getting invited to CPAC. You're suddenly ranking among the top two or three in Republican straw polls. And now here you are just 2 years later, and you're running for president. I mean, did you ever envision yourself entering the political arena prior to 2 years ago?
No, I was actually planning on having a more traditional retirement. In fact, we even bought a home in Florida in a country club on a golf course, and I was going to really become a good golfer. And we bought an organ because I always wanted to learn how to play the organ. And I was going to watch all the movies I haven't seen.
Key to being a good president.
It seems to be.
We've learned that from Obama.
Or key to being a bad one. I'm not sure which. But but at any rate, obviously things changed rather dramatically after the prayer breakfast. And, you know, I thought it would die down and just, you know, be an interesting episode. But it never did. In fact, it continued to build. And then as I started listening to people and discovering depth of despair that existed in our country. And particularly I started thinking about the young people, because my whole career has been dedicated to the welfare of young people. And I realized that at the rate that we were going, that they would not have a quality future, and that I had to get involved.
Whenever I talk to folks who come back from CPAC or various conservative weekends, inevitably you're the guy that everyone comes home talking about. You know, Mitt Romney will be there and a Bush or two and all these guys. You're the guy every time that they go and that they just can't stop talking about. What is it about your message that appeals to conservatives?
Common sense. I think that's what it is. I don't think there are any of our problems that can't be solved with common sense. When we start sprinkling in bits of political expediency, then it becomes the same old gobbledygook that people have been dealing with for decades. And I try not to put that in. I try to just talk about what really makes sense and should make sense to the average person, and not so much what's pro-Democrat or pro-Republican or pro-conservative or pro-liberal, but what's pro-America. Because this is what we have to be concerned about. There are several things that are threatening to destroy us. And if we don't begin to deal with them in a very serious way, if we play politics as usual, we're not going to win.
What are those things that you feel are the biggest threats that could destroy us as a country?
I think our divisiveness, the fact that we're allowing the purveyors of hatred to prevail in our country, a house divided against itself cannot stand. I think our fiscal irresponsibility, which is putting us in a very precarious situation and basically jeopardizing the future of those who come behind us, and our failure to play a major role on the world stage. Our vacuum invites others to fill it, and they perhaps are not nearly as benign as we are.
Yeah, that's for sure. Well, I want to go back to what you said about the divisiveness, because I often feel that conservatives have a great message, but sometimes the messenger leaves much, much, much to be desired. One thing that I think distinguishes you is your ability to connect with voters. What do you think is the key to Republicans going beyond the base and actually expanding the party in this election?
Well, I think Republicans have to be able to articulate Republican ideals, ideals of self-reliance. But you have to couple that with ideals of compassion and recognize that we're all in the same boat. And if part of the boat sinks, the rest of it's going down, too. Therefore, we have to do all we can to make sure that part of it doesn't sink, and particularly the parts that are most vulnerable. And there are things that we can do that will allow people who are, you know, in a very bad situation to, through their own efforts climb out of the danger zone.
It's interesting that you bring that up. One thing that I think appeals to a lot of people about you, Dr. Carson, is you go beyond just plain old politics to talk about big picture societal issues, matters of personal responsibility, self-reliance, the lack of fathers in our society, taking the initiative to read, taking charge of your own education and your own future. I don't think that I've heard anyone in the GOP talking about these kind of big picture societal issues probably since George W. Bush back in the 2000 election. So as president, how do you bring about this kind of big societal change?
Well, you know, the bully pulpit is a very powerful thing. And there are already a lot of organizations throughout our nation that are reaching down and providing people a mechanism out. We need to tell people about these. We need to help to connect them. We need to find ways to potentiate various people's efforts. That's something that you can do very well with a bully pulpit. You look at one of the organizations I spoke at not too long ago. It was a church-related group, but they would go out and get people off the street, bring them into a program which they paid for, 13 weeks free of charge, give them new clothes, teach them job skills, help them to find a job, talk to their employer. And within a year, 70% of those people are off the dole. And, you know, those kinds of programs make a very big difference. And it's people investing in other people, which they're very happy to do if they're seeing results.
Because that's another big part of your message for a long time, I think, is getting people off the dole, encouraging people to be self-reliant and not to be dependent on government and handouts and that type of thing. How do we create a culture of independence?
Well, I think we have to just start emphasizing to people what long-term value there is in working. For instance, in most of the states right now, you can get as much or more from collecting government benefits that you can from working a minimum wage job. So a lot of people say, why would I bother to work if I can get, you know, the same or more from collecting money? And that's understandable why they would think that. But we have to help them to understand that if you take that minimum wage job, you're going to gain new skills that you didn't have before, new relationships which allow you to climb the ladder of opportunity. So in a year or two, you're much better off than that person who's sitting there collecting a check.
Yeah, so it's a matter of changing people's perspective
exactly.
on the payoff.
Right, and that's not something that we tend to talk about anymore.
It's not.
Even the college graduates frequently don't have perspective because they get a college degree and they expect to be hired on as executive vice president rather than working in the mailroom and learning all the ins and outs of the company so that as they climb the ladder, they become much better executives.
Yeah, well, you are a great Horatio Alger story. In fact, I think you won something, the Horatio Alger Award, which I didn't even know was a thing. So you definitely know about pulling yourself up from your bootstraps. Mm-hmm. Do you feel that maybe we've, in many ways, lost our kind of rugged sense of individualism in this country and being willing to work for things, even if it's hard?
Well, there's no question that we've gone from a can-do society to a what-can-you-do-for-me society. And we need to reverse that. Because one leads to massive success and one leads to massive failure. And that's inevitable and is verified by history time and time again.
Well, we're going to take a quick break here and then we'll be back to talk more with Dr. Ben Carson. Back in just a moment. If you're enjoying my conversation with Dr. Ben Carson, then I'd highly recommend that you check out his inspiring autobiography, Gifted Hands. And right now, you can download the audiobook of Gifted Hands or any of Dr. Carson's books for free with a special promotion for our listeners from audible.com. Just go to audibletrial.com/kickasspolitics for a free 30-day trial and a free audiobook download. Now, that free audiobook can be any of Dr. Carson's books, including his autobiography, Gifted Hands, or his most recent book titled One Nation, What We Can All Do to Save America's Future, Or really, you can choose from any of Audible's 180,000 titles. So go to audibletrial.com/kickasspolitics or click on the sponsor link on our webpage and go get your free audio book. And if you like Kick-Ass Politics and you want to help keep us on the air, then please support the show by making a donation to our GoFundMe campaign at gofundme.com/kickasspolitics. Or go to the show website at kickasspolitics.com and click on the donate link. Your support will help keep us going and putting out new podcasts in the future. That's gofundme.com/kickasspolitics. And now, back to more with my guest today, Dr. Ben Carson. We're back with my guest today, Dr. Ben Carson, famed neurosurgeon, best-selling author, and now presidential hopeful. So let's talk about you as a presidential candidate. In your book, America the Beautiful, you say that you believe it's a very good idea for physicians, scientists, engineers, and others trained to make decisions based on facts and empirical data to get involved in the political arena. So now that you yourself have entered the Republican primary for president, what is your particular skill set and your unique perspective bring to the discussion, Dr. Carson?
Well, what separates me from much of the other field is the fact that, you know, my career has been dedicated to solving problems, in many cases extremely complex problems that people have been trying to solve for years and never were able to solve. And it's not because I was the greatest physician that ever existed, but rather because I learned how to take advantage of the people around me, recognizing that there were people of tremendous skill and knowledge. And if you can organize them and synergistically use all of their skills, you can solve the problem. And that's the case with our nation as well. Also, you know, I've been privileged to have decades of experience in corporate America, you know, helping to oversee multinational corporations, learning the business models and how to make things work efficiently. You know, I've had an opportunity to start a nonprofit, 9 of 10 of which fail. Ours is one of the ones that didn't fail and actually has become massively successful and is active in all 50 states and won some of the major national charity awards. To do all these things, you have to have some semblance of knowing what you're doing. And, for the people who think that physicians can only deal with medicine, I just offer those things as indications that we actually have brains too, and we actually know how to do things.
Yeah, I think that's established. Personally, I think this should be your slogan. It's not brain surgery. Or maybe that's something, a zinger you can throw into the first debate there.
Exactly.
Well, you do come from a different background, being more results driven. Politicians are used to working in an atmosphere almost of zero accountability, where your chickens never come home to roost. But as a doctor, you are driven by outcomes. So how would you apply that philosophy to governing if you were elected president?
Well, I would look at things that have worked in the past. There are various types of programs that can be applied to inefficient organizations. That was the way that Toyota went from a small organization to one of the world's biggest manufacturers. 3M has used it. Apple Computer has used it. A number of well-known companies have used a process known as Lean Six Sigma, which assigns responsibility at a much higher level and provides a very good paradigm for how you get efficiency out of a system, cut the cost. You know, one of the problems that was going on, for instance, was with explosive devices. Many of our soldiers were being injured, and we did have a particular type of vehicle that tended to prevent these kinds of injuries, but we could only produce five of them a day. And they then applied this Lean Six Sigma formula, and with the same production line and the same number of people, they were able to produce 50 a day, which greatly increased the safety of our troops. And that's happened in other agencies where it was applied. We should do that across the entire federal government. It should be something that is lean, mean, and efficient, not the gigantic behemoth of inefficiency and unresponsiveness that exists now.
Well, I imagine it'll be a cold day in Florida when you can get that done. But hey, I'm rooting for you there.
We can do it.
You think so? Okay. I hope so, because we certainly need it.
Well, you know, my whole career, I've been faced with people saying, well, no one's ever done that. That can't be done. And, you know, that music to my ears.
Well, then I'll ask you, I guess, what do you think is easier, separating conjoined twins or reforming healthcare?
They're both very difficult. There's no question about it. But I already have, I think, a very good plan for reforming healthcare. One that puts the responsibility back in the hands of patients and healthcare providers and gets the third party out of the way at least 80% of the time. And that's going to save us a lot of money, create the kind of efficiency that is necessary to bring quality and cost control.
Yeah, I think what was it that you said? You said that Obamacare is the worst thing that has happened in the nation since slavery.
I mean, first of all, I didn't say that it was equivalent to slavery, which is what a lot of the left-wingers say. They say,
okay, that's
Carson says it's the
yeah.
same as slavery. And it's not the same as slavery. Slavery was by far the worst thing that ever occurred in our country. But recognize that what Obamacare does is it fundamentally alters the relationship between the government and the people. That is a big deal.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's one of the reasons in socialist countries or countries that are changing to socialism, they always want to gain control of healthcare first. Because if you get control of the most important thing a person has, everything else comes along afterwards.
Yeah, that's true. Well, you know, on another issue, I know that you are a proponent of the flat tax. Why are you a flat taxer versus a fan of consumption tax or some of these other plans out here?
Well, I'm willing to look at all the different plans, but I particularly like the flat or proportional tax because God seemed to think it was fair. He says, give me a tithe or a tenth. You make $10 billion, give me a billion. You make 10, give me one. It hits everybody in the same way.
Yeah.
And that's what we really need. We need something that is truly fair. And I know the president likes to talk about, oh, the top 1%, they don't pay their fair share. Well, I mean, they pay 36 to 37% of the taxes, 1% of the people do. I mean, if they paid their fair share, they'd be paying a lot less than that. So I think maybe he should go back and examine his rhetoric. But what we really want is something that incentivizes, you know, capital expenditure and entrepreneurial risk-taking. Those are the things that drive an economy. Those are the things that propelled us to the top of the world's economy in record time. And, you know, we're doing just the opposite. We're putting in place things that tend to stifle the desire to invest.
You were just talking a minute ago about the military, and a few weeks ago, Jeb Bush took a little bit of flack on the Iraq issue because he said he would have gone to Iraq, and then he said he wouldn't have gone to Iraq. And just yesterday in an interview, you said that you would not have decided to go to Iraq. If you had been in the Oval Office, how do you think you would have handled the situation with Saddam Hussein?
Well, to me, one of the big problems was Saddam Hussein.
Right.
And I would have used one of multiple ways of getting rid of an evil individual. You know, there was a time when, you know, we had much better relationships with varying factions of governments elsewhere. We need to redevelop those ties. We need to have boots on the ground, both overt and covert boots underground. And we need to be able to do things without necessarily broadcasting them all over the world.
While we're on the subject, what about ISIS?
Well, the overall strategy is to destroy them before they destroy us.
Not downgrade. Destroy.
Destroy.
Okay. Obama said he was happy with downgrading.
Downgrading doesn't work.
Or degrading them.
You know, Winston Churchill said it best. He said, fight your enemy today while you can beat them, or you'll fight them tomorrow for your life. Yeah. And that basically is the situation I see. The radical jihadists are rapidly spreading, and they have a goal of destroying us. And we have to be serious about this. These are not JV people. These are not people to be just ignored. And if we don't get rid of them over there, believe me, we're going to be fighting them here.
To go back to something that is a little bit more in your traditional wheelhouse, perhaps, mm-hmm. Ben, you are unique in that you are the only person running for president who's a vegetarian, that I'm aware of, at least. As a doctor and a vegetarian, what do you think about Michelle Obama's school lunch program, as well as this year's U.S. dietary guidelines to reduce Americans' consumption of meat?
Well, I believe that it's nice to talk about healthy eating and healthy living, and it's very good to educate people about it. I do not believe that the government has an obligation to force people to do things against their will, particularly in terms of their diet. I just see that as a very dangerous precedent to set.
Yeah, well, I'm trying to envision you as we get into the primary season, as we get up to the Iowa caucus. Mm-hmm. How are you going to handle, as a healthy guy, you're clearly healthier than most people running for office, I imagine, and as a vegetarian, how are you going to handle all those state fairs?
Not a problem, because even though I primarily eat a vegetarian diet, if somebody comes along and says, this is our delicacy, would you mind tasting it? I say, oh, no problem.
Okay.
That won't hurt me.
Okay. Yeah. No, you got to know your enemy food wise. So got to try it. Okay.
Absolutely.
And there's always corn.
There's corn. there's potatoes. There's all kinds of good things. But yeah. No, I don't have any particular problem, tasting things and eating them, particularly if somebody has gone through a great deal of problem of effort to prepare them.
Well, you know, Ben, Jeb Bush is on the paleo diet. You know, the guys who eat nothing but meat. I would love to see this conversation come up in the first debate.
Indeed.
Yeah, you know, just for a second, I want to take a break from the issues to talk about something personal. To go all the way back to your childhood, growing up as a boy, your dad wasn't around very much. You grew up in the Detroit inner city. Your mom struggled financially to take care of her family. And in your book, Gifted Hands, you talk about how growing up as a young man, you had a good degree of anger. Is there a part of you that looks at the destruction in Ferguson or in Baltimore just a couple of weeks ago and thinks, there but for the grace of God go I?
Oh, without question. I recognize that I am extraordinarily fortunate because, you know, there was a time when I was 14 and I tried to stab someone. And they happened to have a large metal belt buckle on underneath their clothing, and the knife blade struck that and broke. If it hadn't been there, the course of my life would have been very different. And that's one of the reasons that I do feel a great deal of compassion, you know, for the people who find themselves in that situation, find themselves imprisoned because of a mistake. Doesn't mean that I excuse the behavior, but I'm certainly going to be looking, along with others, for very good ways to keep it from happening.
Yeah. And as part of that, are you looking at prison reform?
I think there needs to be some degree of prison reform. We certainly need to look at a kind of sentencing that puts nonviolent people into a situation where they get schooled on becoming better criminals. We need to be a little bit more circumspect about the way that's done.
Yeah, I think so. And I think that's interesting because I think that's very much part of what you talk about being results-driven and outcome-driven.
Right.
Taking that kind of perspective to something that in many ways isn't actually working in a positive way.
Correct.
Well, Dr. Ben Carson, before we go, can you give folks out there something that they can use? As a doctor, what would you say are the top three recommendations that you could give people, the average American, to improve their health and longevity?
Oh, I love that question. That's a softball.
It won't be that easy in debates, I'm sure.
Eat 3 well-balanced meals a day. Drink 6 to 8 glasses of water or water equivalent substances, and get regular sleep and exercise. If you do that, along with not putting harmful substances into your body, most of the people in medicine will be out of a job.
Well, now that you're transitioning to a new career here, so I guess it's so easy for you to say.
Indeed.
Well, Dr. Ben Carson, thanks so much again for coming on to talk with me, and good luck on the campaign trail.
Well, thank you. It's been delightful being with you.
Well, that's the show, folks, and I want to thank Dr. Ben Carson again for taking time to come on the show while he was in town. I'll post a link in the show notes on our website to the Amazon page for several of Dr. Carson's books, including his autobiography, Gifted Hands. And as I mentioned before, if you prefer to listen to the audiobook of Gifted Hands or any of his books, you can actually do so for free thanks to that special offer for our listeners from audible.com. Just go to audibletrial.com/kickasspolitics, or you can click on the sponsor link on our webpage at kickasspolitics.com. You'll get your free, no-obligation 30-day trial and a free audiobook. They've actually got 180,000 titles to choose from, including most, or I think possibly even all, of Dr. Carson's books. So by all means, go check them out. It's free. Again, it's audibletrial.com/kickasspolitics, or click on the sponsor link on our webpage. Now, be sure to subscribe to the show on iTunes and leave us a review. And if you like the show, then let us know that we're doing something right over here by sending us a donation on the website, or you can make a donation at gofundme.com/kickasspolitics. In the next podcast, I'm finally going to get around to that episode I've been promising you about the threat of EMP. An electromagnetic pulse has the ability to knock out the entire U.S. electrical grid. And right now, America is a sitting duck with no effective defense against it. In fact, today's guest, Dr. Ben Carson, recently raised concerns about the threat of EMP. And I think he's the only one of the major candidates for president who has actually made this a priority. So in the next show, I'll talk with Dr. Peter Vincent Pry about just how vulnerable we are, how bad it could be, and which major industry doesn't want our politicians or the public to take the threat seriously. That's all in the next episode. But for now, I'm Ben Mathis, and thanks for listening to Kick-Ass Politics.